If I have not said it already, I really must say that I have for many years been intrigued by the writings of a man we call Tertullian. I've mentioned him several times already in previous weeks. His importance to the growth of Latin theology cannot be overstated. He really is the founder of the theology that many of us are heirs to. He is the one who made powerful use of his wisdom to shape the thinking and the teaching of the Church of the West as it would become known some centuries later. Today I want to share with you some of his words found in a letter to the Roman authorities. In it, he mocks the way the emperor thinks he is serving the empire when he's killing Christians. Tertullian wants his emperor to know that such is not the case. We turn to what is known as his apology, and we're going to go to chapter 37. You can find the entire apology as we have it today, again, at ccel.org online. Chapter 37 begins with Tertullian asking a question that resounds with truth. He says, if we are commanded to love our enemies, who is going to be injured by us? He goes on, if we are enjoined then to love our enemies, as I have remarked above, whom have we to hate? If injured, we are forbidden to retaliate, lest we become as bad ourselves. Who can suffer injury at our hands? In regard to this, recall your own experiences. How often you inflict gross cruelties on Christians, partly because it is your own inclination, and partly in obedience to the law. How often, too, the hostile mob, paying no regard to you, takes the law into its own hand and assails us with stones and flames. With the very frenzy of the Bacchanals, they do not even spare the Christian dead, but tear them, now sadly changed, no longer entire from the rest of the tomb, from the asylum, that we might say, of death, cutting the dead in pieces, rending them asunder. Yet, banded together as we are, ever so ready to sacrifice our lives, what single case of revenge for injury are you able to point to? Though if it were held right among us to repay evil by evil, a single knight with a torch or two could achieve an ample vengeance. But away with the idea of a divine group avenging itself by human fires or shrinking from the sufferings in which it is tried. If we desired, indeed, to act the part of open enemies, not merely of secret avengers, would there be any lacking in strength, whether of numbers or resources? The Moors, the Marcomanni, the Parthians themselves, or any single people, however great, inhabiting a distinct territory and confined within its own boundaries, surpasses indeed in numbers one spread over all the world. Tertullian is making the point that since Christians are so spread out over the face of the earth, they are not a threat in any single area. So why would you want to kill us? He said, it was only yesterday that we began to be. We have filled every place among you, cities, islands, fortresses, towns, marketplaces, the very camp of your army, tribes, companies, palace, senate, forum. We have left nothing to you but the temples of your gods. For what wars should we not be fit, not eager, even with unequal forces, we who so willingly yield ourselves to the sword, if in our religion it were not counted better to be slain than to slay? Without arms even, and raising no insurrectionary banner, but simply in enmity to you, we could carry on the contest with you by an ill-willed quarantine alone. For such multitudes of men were to break away from you and take themselves to some remote corner of the world, why, the very loss of so many citizens, whatever sort they were, would cover the empire with shame. No, in the very forsaking, vengeance would be inflicted. Why, you would be horror-struck at the solitude in which you would find yourselves, at such an all-prevailing silence and that bleakness and blankness of a dead world? You'd have to seek subjects to govern. You would have more enemies than citizens remaining, for now it is the immense number of Christians which makes your enemies so few. Almost all of the inhabitants of your various cities being followers of Christ, yet you choose to call us enemies of the human race rather than of human error. Let me ask, who would you, from those secret foes, who would deliver to you, who would always be busy both destroying your souls, ruining your health, who would save you? I mean, from the attacks of those spirits of evil, which without reward or hire we exercise. This alone would be revenge enough for us, that you were henceforth left free to the possession of unclean spirits. But instead of taking into account what is due to us for the important protection we afford you, and though we are not merely no trouble to you, but in fact necessary to your well-being, you prefer to hold us enemies, as indeed we are, yet not of humanity, but rather of man's error. Tertullian's logic is a clearly laid out argument. He says, look, here are the facts. First, we believe that it is better to die than to kill someone else. Second, we have filled every place with our people. Only the temples of your gods remain unfilled with Christians. Third, if we were to fight by simply walking away, your empire would be deathly quiet because there'd be no one left in the cities and the countryside. Fourth, if we desired vengeance, we could just leave you to the possession and oppression of the evil spirits who we keep at bay to preserve your life. Since all these are true, one cannot think that we are enemies, but you still call us that. In chapter 39, he then moves to a positive statement of what Christianity is about and its practices that are taught and encouraged. He addresses the emperor as he writes, I shall go on at once, then, to establish the peculiarities of Christian society, that as I have refuted the evil charged against it, I may point out its positive good. We are a body, knit together as such by a common religious profession, by unity of discipline, and by the bond of a common hope. We meet together as an assembly and congregation, that offering up prayer to God as with united force we may wrestle with Him in our supplications. This violence God delights in. We pray too for the emperors, for their ministers, and for all authority, for the welfare of the world, for the prevalence of peace, for the delay of the final consummation. We assemble to read our sacred writings. If any peculiarity of the times makes either forewarning or reminiscence needful, however it be in that respect, with the sacred words we nourish our faith. We animate our hope, we make our confidence more steadfast, and no less by inculcations of God's precepts, we confirm good habits. In the same place also, exhortations are made, rebukes and sacred censures are administered. For with a great gravity is the work of judging carried on among us, as befits those who feel assured that they are in the sight of God. And you have the most notable example of judgment to come when anyone has sinned so grievously as to require his severance from us in prayer, in the congregation, and in all sacred intercourse. The tried men of our elders preside over us, obtaining that honor not by purchase, but by established character. There is no buying and selling of any sort in the things of God. Though we have our treasure chest, it is not made up of purchase money. It is as of a religion that has its price. On the monthly day, if he likes, each one of us puts in a small donation, but only if it be his pleasure, and only if he is able. For there is no compulsion. All is voluntary. These gifts are, as it were, piety's deposit fund. For they are not taken thence and spent on feasts and drinking bouts and eating houses, but to support and bury poor people, to supply the wants of boys and girls destitute of means and parents, and of old persons confined now to the house, such too as have suffered shipwreck, and if there happen to be any in the mines, or banished to the islands, or shut up in the prisons, for nothing but their fidelity to the cause of God's church, they become the nurslings of their confession. But it's mainly the deeds of a love so noble that lead many to put a brand upon us. See, they say, how they love one another. For themselves are animated by mutual hatred, how they are ready even to die for one another, for they themselves will sooner be put to death. Tertullian is a man whose writings are worth getting to know. I have given you only a short taste of some of them here today.